Welcome to The Road Untraveled. Today we have Semel Shah, founder and managing partner of Haystack VC, one of the leading early stage funds with investments such as Instacart, DoorDash, HashiCorp, Giphy, Opendoor, and many more. Semel is also a venture partner at Lightspeed and a good friend that has been a mentor to me since I entered the venture industry over 4 years ago. Semel has built an incredible network on both the institutional investor and LP side, as well as the founder and early stage company side, and we discuss his thoughts on the current state of valuations and the market, as well as what he expects to see 6 to 12 months from now. I hope you enjoy our discussion. This is The Road Untraveled. Hey, Semel, how are you?
Good to talk to you, Brian. Doing well.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. For anyone joining us, Semel's managing partner of Haystack VC and also a venture partner with Lightspeed. Super excited to have him on. And shout out to the Lightspeed team as well, who I know Semel works pretty closely with. But maybe just to start, let's talk about the fundraising landscape. You know, you obviously, as part of Haystack, have experience building and raising a fund, but also with Lightspeed, you know, being part of some of these bigger institutional guys. How's the fundraising landscape going to change over the next 6 to 12 months? And is there anything in particular that you're kind of keeping an eye on?
Do you mean entrepreneurs fundraising from venture capital firms or venture capital firms raising from LPs?
A good question. I would say venture capital firms raising from LPs. So how does GP dollars flow differently? What are the types of things that you think are going to be interesting or change?
Well, one is it's actually good timing for this, Brian, because I've been talking to I've been building relationships with LPs a lot over the last 3 years just to build up my own funds and learn their business. And I think just saying LPs as a monolith is potentially problematic in the same way just saying VCs as a monolith, right? Mm-hmm. Or entrepreneurs, there's a lot of variance in there. And so what I would say is for LPs that have very sophisticated management, but also no underlying operating business, a lot of those LPs view this as a really great time, like the next decade that opens up, the 20s. Where you just know you're going to start off with lower asset prices and lower prices of equity to come in. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they're ready to deploy and ready to go and have been planning for some kind of downturn. They didn't know it was going to be pandemic driven, but you know, there's one university endowment I know that had been liquidating in 2018, 2019, because they thought it was getting too hot. They didn't know that there would be a coronavirus, but so I think that it's a tale of two cities. For the LPs that have like, let's say, a high net asset value or highly illiquid portfolio, I think they're going to be slower to deploy because they need to see some cash coming back. And then you have the tough one of like endowments and nonprofits and universities where they do have underlying operating businesses. And so you can just imagine a university endowment that has, you know, a tuition potential problem in the future and stress on their own medical system, being under like great organizational stress, or a foundation that, you know, needs in-person events and charitable events like, mm-hmm. And auctions and stuff to make their operating budget work. Mm-hmm. So, on the one hand, I don't think society is going to cry for these organizations. On the other hand, you know, they're probably going to be a little bit tighter with their purse strings. And so I think what that means for venture capital firms raising from quote unquote LPs is that they're going to likely find a variance in an appetite for investing based on what kind of LP they are. One. Two is I think that they're going to hope that their venture capital funds, which over the last decade have gone from 3 to 4 year time deployment, sorry, like investment deployment cycles to down to 2 years, mm-hmm. Are hoping those will maybe come back to a more normal level of around 3 years so that they're slower deployment. I wouldn't be surprised if some funds contracted a little bit just because they felt like it was just a little too big to manage, where you lose some of the craft aspect of this. and then also, like, I think it's very possible that, you know, certain LP models, like a fund-to-fund model, is really under stress right now. that people upgrade their LP list into the direct sources of capital rather than the indirect sources of capital. I think for hopeful VCs who are looking to start their own franchises, I don't think I have good news, because unless you have really deep relationships, or somebody really backing you and pounding the table for you, most LPs are grounded, like literally grounded in their home office or at their home. And, you know, I just had an LP from a major university endowment just tell me and say, like, you know, we have plenty of money to invest. That's not the problem. He's like, I've never given money to someone I haven't had dinner with.
Right.
So how am I going to do that? And so I think that's really hard. I'm somewhere in the middle personally, where I've spent so much time getting to know LPs, and also I've kept my funds really small, that I'm actually in a really good position. But I think that just like entrepreneurs and a lot of VCs, there aren't really relationships built in between. Most people view each other as an ATM. And, you know, I think that's going to be tested in the next couple of years. So,
yeah, that's great. I want to circle back to deployment pace, which is something you brought up in the beginning. I mean, if I put on sort of my growth equity hat for a second, you know, if I'm talking to a company, or I was talking to a company over the past couple months, you know, whatever their forward multiple was, that forecast was largely driven off of, you know, a continued business or going concern. I would argue if I wait 6 months or maybe even less than that, the forward multiple that I can utilize is going to be a lot lower, because hopefully by then that forecast is sort of drawn in and a little more realistic. How do you think deployment pace changes, and should you still just be trying to get into good businesses regardless of what it costs right now? Because I do think it could fundamentally change as we do start to finally see, you know, the result of some of these months of revenue really being impacted.
So two questions in there, one on the growth side and multiples, and then two on time diversity. I'll answer them in reverse. In terms of the multiples and stuff, I think that, I mean, you know this world better than me. I just get to watch, you know, partly from Lightspeed, partly from being at GGV before, and partly from being an observer of the ecosystem. It seems like ultimately everything gets traded on like growth, quarterly growth, and your margin health, and you get some multiple based on your revenue. And there's a whole bunch of people that think it should be 10x, and there's a whole bunch of people that can justify 30 or 50x. I have no idea. I think there are enough growth investors in the market for a good business that you can get a bear and bull on the same, like on the same side of a trade. Mm-hmm. And like Figma is probably a recent example. Like, there's probably some growth investor out there who's super smart, who's like, why would I pay that multiple on Figma? And it's a freemium product. And like, yeah, it's cool, but, you know, why don't I just buy Adobe and it's liquid and I can just watch, you know, and maybe they'll hire, maybe they'll recruit and integrate and acquire a competitor. Then you have a bull who's like, well, you know, Figma at 2 billion. If I look at the stock of Adobe, and then I think about designers being one of the most, if not the most important part of like product development, and designers having more power. And now people, it's not just people in the US and Europe building world-class products. We have China, Asia, maybe even Africa over the next two decades. And then if we're going to move over from a world, we're going to transform from a world where designers would give mocks up to engineers who would go deploy it and then produce it. Maybe you can just, maybe Figma becomes your design and production environment. Yep. Then you can kind of say, yeah, I see $100 billion vision. Right. So, you know, there's always someone out there willing to hear the pitch and dream.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Do you think investors should be playing offense or defense right now? Obviously, there's no answer for everyone, but in general, do you think, are you leaning more one way or the other?
Well, I would never say what another investor should do. I think that different investors have different points of view. I'm happy to share what I'm doing, but I think what I've noticed in the ecosystem is that the ones playing offense are the ones who quickly triaged what was wrong, like what was impacted in their portfolio, and have reoriented to a new world and thinking about upside maximization. So if you think of like Datadog or DocuSign right now, we're like each $20 and $25 billion companies, right? And they're only going to go up. Like, you got to assume there's some Datadogs and DocuSigns in the private markets, right? So I think there's a group of people who are on the hunt. I think there are also a number of people on the hunt where the triage, in the private markets where the triage took longer, and they're more bearish on the economy. And so I think those people are playing more defense than offense. For me, I've decided for Haystack, being a small fund and like with so much money in the seed market over the last few years where the prices have been distorted, that, you know, we kind of told our team, like, we still want to be in market. We're still writing term sheets and have done that during COVID and during the shelter in place, but that just to add some speed bumps to the process so we move a little bit slower, which I think is probably a good thing given given how fast the seed market was moving before.
That's interesting. Yeah. Let's put on your sort of founder hat right now and think about the Haystack portfolio. What are some of the checklist items that you think are critical for founders to be focused on right now that maybe weren't top of mind pre-pandemic?
Oh, wow. I honestly, this feels like way, way out of my pay grade. I mean, I don't even know, like, I mean, I've never worked at like a big organization. You know, I technically manage people, but it doesn't feel like that. I don't know what you do, man. It sounds hard. I don't have a good answer. I mean, I'm just thinking about a conversation I had with an investor friend where they have a company with like about 100 people where they're like a core investor, and the majority of the people at the company are in their 30s or 40s with kids. And half of them are like nervous to go back to work, and half of them are just dying to go back to work because they're at home with their kids going crazy. And the founder is relatively young and is like, doesn't want to go back to work. I don't know, man. I think it's hard.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Don't have a good answer. It's a great question, but I think that's why I do what I do. And I'm not a not a CEO.
I hear you. Any industries that you're catching yourself looking at or focusing on that you weren't focused on before?
No, I definitely have talked to a lot of investors who are thinking in the way that you just articulated. And I feel like what I have been thinking about, which is super broad, is that before the pandemic, we were investing primarily in software, in like cloud infrastructure, cloud applications, stuff with high margins already. And so I feel like there's just a greater desire to make sure that our fund is investing in software, that the market is large enough and can have software like margins and not being sort of seduced by a thesis. I do think COVID provides tailwinds for certain things. But I also think a lot of those things are obvious. And so that all these companies sprout up and it's easy to build a portfolio with exposure to something, but who knows what's going to work. You know, so I call this my, my chocolate chip cookie company fallacy, which is I think like when I was on campus where you are, right? I guess you're back in San Francisco. Like, I just remember I met this guy in Boston and he was an entrepreneur and he took me to this party with like a lot of really, really rich people. I overheard this conversation where someone was like, yeah, I bought a chocolate chip cookie company. And like someone else was like, oh yeah, me too, you know? And I think that's kind of what happens with investors, is just like, oh yeah, I think telemedicine is going to be big. Like, oh yeah, we have a play there. And then, you know, the other fund's like, yeah, we have a play there too, you know?
Yep.
And so I try to avoid that kind of trap. So for me, I think it's, I do think entrepreneurs, going back to your earlier question, like what should they be doing, in, at least in a fundraising context, I do think as part of the discussion, they have to kind of say what's, you know, how is COVID for an existing business, like how has COVID either positively or negatively impacted the business and why? I think you have to be able to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just going to come up in any pitch. And then for kind of newer, like less mature businesses or ones starting off the ground, I do think in any pitch, kind of have to, you do kind of have to ask a founder and say, what's your view on the economy and how consumers are going to behave and how businesses are going to behave and how are you designing things to address that? It comes up in every pitch.
Right. Right.
So
what do you think about you as a board member for a second? You know, what do you think are the most important things boards can be doing for teams right now?
So funny you ask. I have only been on one board, and that's because Mike Maples invited me to a company that we seeded to be on the board with him. And I thought it was a way to learn and spend more time with Mike, but I don't like being on boards. So I'm not really on boards, but I guess if I were a founder and I had an early stage company and I had a board, what I'd probably want my board to do is to, one, help me plan for the next 2 years in terms of headcount, like making sure my financials, like an extra set of eyes on the financials. Because a lot of founders just don't even, like, don't have this financial literacy to just look at, you know, look at things. I mean, I see it all the time.
Three statements, yeah.
Yeah, the three statements, exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I do either, but it's, and then to really help, like, frame the company up for the next round of financing. And, you know, I think that would be super helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, mental health has played a role in just the isolation that you were sort of describing. Some people being so ready to go back, some people loving it. I'm curious if you've seen anything, whether it's what you've been reading or what you've been listening to, that's been super helpful in how you've framed this new norm that we're living in.
Well, I'm probably unique in the sense of, like, I don't watch a lot of TV outside of, like, live sports or, like, really bad stuff on YouTube, like YouTube rabbit holes. Because we have, like, little kids and it's just, like, crazy schedule. But I found myself, like, doing something that I haven't done before, which is, like, watching binge, like, shows that are coming online. So, and I like it when other people are watching it too. So this, when Tiger King was on,
oh yeah,
I didn't want to watch it. And then I watched the first episode. I'm like, that was kind of pretty good. The second episode I thought was, like, offensive. I was like, this is like way too much. And then the internet told me, like, episode 3 was great. And then by the end of it, I didn't want it to end. And my wife too, we were just watching it and we're like, this is complete trash, but we love it. And then I felt so empty after that, you know, like, and then I'm sure you watch The Last Dance, right?
Of course. Of course.
So I could talk, you could do a whole podcast series just talking about The Last Dance. I mean,
I know.
I think the last Sunday I told my wife, I'm like, from 6 o'clock for the rest of the evening, like, I'm gone. Yeah. And she's like, wait a minute, I'm going to do dinner and all that and bedtime. I'm like, yes. I'm like, you gotta just stop it, just go.
It was so well done.
It was so well done. And then I felt really empty. And then this is gonna sound really trashy, but my wife and I love Selling Sunset.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, it's bad. It's not something I'd recommend. But actually the soundtrack on Spotify is really good. And it's about a bunch of real estate agents in his two brother real estate agents in LA, and it's bad.
Yeah, I love it.
It's bad.
Yeah, I love it.
But so I like that. I think a lot of cooking. You know, for me, we're very fortunate. Like, we don't have a medical issue, and we're, you know, fine work wise. I think we're so social with our kids and our neighborhood and school and work. So suppressing that side of our personalities is like pretty weird.
Right.
You know, I'm sure for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Last one for you. This has been super fun. I really appreciate you jumping on here. Let's just put your pull your crystal ball out for a second. You know,
yeah.
I want to think a little bit about travel. So when we are allowed to travel again, are you going to New York and Oregon and Iowa, you know, as frequently to get in front of founders, or do you think we live in a world where you just do more of this stuff virtually and people aren't traveling and doing as many conferences and everything?
I definitely think all of that stuff will come back at some point. I do think this is like a black swan event. So in terms of new normal, it's a new normal for a bit. The problem is that if you're living in New York or like, I mean, you can just look at the stats per state or on a per capita basis. Like it's really been concentrated in the Northeast where it's like density, high buildings, like tight corridors, like, you know, the research has been coming out that a lot of this stuff breaks out indoors, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, at some point I think people will go out and about, and like things will get back to normal. When that will be, I think it will take a while, for people to feel comfortable. In terms of, for me as an early stage investor, I don't mind not meeting people in person. I prefer it, but maybe parts of the process change whereby maybe you kind of date online, so to speak, and then you sort of consummate a relationship, you know, in person maybe. I think that's easier at the earlier stages. I think for the later stages, it's harder. I don't know how you wire a $10 million check or $100 million check without meeting everyone on the management.
Staring team. Someone in the eye.
Yeah. So, absolutely. So like, you know, I know some of those deals are happening now and they're probably relationships that already exist. So I don't think we've tested out the ones that haven't. And I'm also not sure, like, in the marketplace of founders and investors, who wants to, you know, it's a double-sided marketplace. So do both sides really want to engage in that way? I don't know.
Right. Yep.
It's a TBD.
TBD.
I think it's a TBD.
Exactly.
I think it's a TBD for this whole year. And there are little signals. Like I think a lot of people in the tech world look to Facebook and Twitter for what they're doing. A lot of people are going to look to their local school districts as a bellwether. Or they'll look at like sort of mass consumer things like, you know, what's going to happen with the NFL or Disney theme parks or, you know, college campuses. So we're close to some bellwether signaling, but not yet.
Semel Shah from Haystack, thanks so much for being here, man. This was really fun.
Yeah, it was great to catch up with you and welcome back to town. And
I appreciate it.
Yeah, hope everything
good to catch up, and okay. Hopefully post all this mess. I'll see you again for a beer
for sure.
Okay.